So as many of you know, I have been taking some courses at Heritage, at the seminary, and they have been mainly focusing on preaching. Preaching is something that I think is very important. It's important to do it well, and I want to get better at it. And so I appreciate you as my church family allowing me both to go and learn more, and then being my guinea pigs as I try and learn and grow. And I do appreciate it. So I'm going to do something a little bit different this morning if you're with me. One of the things I think we'll find, and I think most of you would agree with me, that probably the greatest preacher that has ever lived would have been Jesus himself. He had a way when he spoke of just engaging people and bringing truth in a way that just cut right through to the heart of the matter. And I think you'll find, if as you read the Gospels, when Jesus spoke and taught, he very often preferred to speak in stories. That was kind of his main way of doing things. And so I'm going to try and steal a page from his book this morning and walk us through a story. I'm going to do what is called a first-person sermon. And so I'm going to attempt to bring us through a story through the eyes of someone who was there. So you can follow along if you'd like, if you have your Bible and you want to turn to 2 Samuel. We'll be looking from about chapter 15 to chapter 17. It's a story many of you know well, but you can also feel free. Oh, and put a thumb in at Psalm 3 as well. We'll go there later. But also feel free to just kind of sit back and experience the story through the eyes of someone who was there. Okay? Let's try this. I will never forget that day. I can see it all now as if it had just happened. I was just returning home when the messenger came storming up to the house. He was coming from the direction of the palace. He was obviously distraught. You know, you could tell right away this was not good news. He had my attention before he opened his mouth. And what he said cut me to the heart. He said, "Absalom has revolted. He has declared himself king in Hebron, and he and his men are on their way to Jerusalem right now. King David has fled. He has ordered all of his officials to flee, to leave the city before Absalom gets here, lest he put us all to the sword. You must go now." I was just struggling to breathe. The words hit like a hammer. I fell to my knees. I tore my robe in anguish, and I couldn't even find words. I looked up and I said, Where is the king now? But he was already on his way. The messenger was on his way, gone. What was I going to do? My name is Hushai. I am King David's friend. Many people would claim to be King David's friend, but I am his friend. That's my official job title. I am King David's friend, his trusted counselor and confidant. I've known David for years, and I've been through thick and thin with him, and I couldn't imagine, or I could only imagine, what he must be feeling right now. Absalom was his now oldest son. It wasn't always that way. He had an older brother named Amnon. But after an incident with Absalom's sister and Amnon, Absalom bided his time for 2 years and then killed his own brother. The king did not deal with the situation maybe as directly as he should have. In hindsight, Absalom went to live with his grandfather on his mother's side for a few years, and a reconciliation process had happened slowly, and Absalom had come back about 4 years ago. He had moved back to Jerusalem. Absalom, now the king's firstborn, next in line to the throne. Absalom, who was widely understood to be the most handsome man in Jerusalem. He had everything that a man wanted to be and that a woman wanted to have in a man. He was tall and handsome, long flowing hair. He was good looking and he knew it, but he was more than good looking. He was cunning. And I had wondered if he was done. And now we see what he had been doing for those 4 years. He had been plotting and scheming, and now he had done it. He had gone down to Hebron under false pretenses, gathered secretly some support to himself, and he has declared himself king. A nation can't have two kings. So what were we to do? I was told to flee, and with good reason. Like I say, there can only be one king, and when Absalom and his forces got to the city, it didn't take a lot of imagination to think what would happen to the outgoing king and his officials. But I had to find David. I quickly headed towards the palace, thought that would be the place to start. When I got there, it was almost deserted. On the way, the streets were electric with tension. People didn't know what to do. Many people were weeping and wailing. The palace was almost deserted when I got there. I didn't waste my time looking. I thought, no, the king is gone. I grabbed a man who was nearby and I said, which way did the king go? Which king, he said. I said, King David, where did he go? I said, he and his family and his servants left that way towards the Kidron Valley. I went as fast as I could. I don't run as fast as I used to. But I managed to make my way down to the gate, and there I could see the long line of the king's entourage as they were making their way down to the valley. I knew the king was among them somewhere, but I couldn't make him out yet. I had to try and find him. So I started pushing through the crowd. It was a scene that it still breaks my heart when I think about it. People weeping and wailing, citizens not sure if they should stay or go. The families of the servants and the officials of the king packed hastily and coming down the trail, children not understanding what's going on, weeping, wailing, afraid. I moved through them and I started to see the ranks of soldiers, grim, serious, armed, not kidding around, line after line of them. These were not all of the official army, and I assumed that Absalom would not have revolted until he could secure the support of much of the regular army. No, this was David's special forces. These were men who had been fighting with David from the time of his days as an outlaw in the days of King Saul. These were not men to be trifled with, but even they seemed uncertain. I made my way, and I was trying to get through the crowd, and I thought I could see my king ahead. And he was talking with the leader of this line of soldiers that I couldn't get around. It was Ittai the Gittite. He was the leader of the Gittites. They were a contingent of men who had followed David from his time in Gath. These were Philistines. These were once our enemies, but David had somehow won them over, and they had been loyal to him ever since. And I could overhear part of the conversation as I was trying to make my way up to David. And David was asking him, he was saying, Ittai, my friend, why are you coming with me? Stay in Jerusalem. You only just arrived here. You're foreigners in this land, and I would make you wanderers. Stay with the new king. It's fine. Don't risk yourself. Don't come with me. I don't even know where I'm going. And Ittai spoke, and you could tell he spoke for all of his men, when he says, wherever my lord the king goes, that is where I will go. If it means life or it means death, we are yours to a man. And you could tell David would have to physically force those men back into the city. And so he relented. Very well, he says, march on. And I thought, at a time when your son has raised up the army against you, you need all the help you can get. And yet he was willing to send away some of his best fighters. David was moving up, the column was in formation and moving, and I was trying to get past them. I was getting towards the bottom of the valley now, and suddenly the smell of incense filled my nostrils. And I could see the Levites and the priests in their robes. They had come out with the Ark of the Covenant from the temple, and they were prepared to follow David. And they had set the ark down, and they were offering incense and sacrifices and prayers. And as I got closer, I could hear they were prayers for the safety of the king. The man in the city's words echoed in my ears, which king? But I knew these were David's men. And I could, as I was making my way closer, I could see David talking to the priests. And I got closer and I could hear what he was saying. And again, it surprised me. He was talking to Zadok and Abiathar, his high priests, and he was telling them, men, take the Ark of the Covenant back to the city. You and the Levites, take it back to the temple. That's where it belongs. We are prepared to go with you, my lord the king, they said. No. He says that the Ark belongs in the temple of the Lord. And he said, if God is pleased with me, he will bring me back to this city and this temple, and I will see the Ark again. And if God is not pleased to bring me back, if I have displeased him and he has other plans for me, I trust him to do what is best. You men go back. They didn't seem convinced. And then an idea crossed David's face, and he said, listen, go back and bring your sons with you. Zadok and Abiathar had a couple of strong young sons, Jonathan and Ahimaaz. These boys could run. And he said, go back with your sons and send word to me by your sons. When you learn of anything that happens in the city, when Absalom and his men come, keep your ear to the ground and send your sons. I will be staying at the fords of the river in the wilderness. That seemed to convince them, and they already started making arrangements to get the ark back into the city and move on. I moved past the priests. David was moving up the line of people. Some of these were his own wives and his other wives and their sons. Their families, men, women, children, packed in haste and moving up the hill. I was almost to David when a messenger overcame both of us and rushed up to David, knelt before him. My lord the king, he said, I bring news. It was news that I wish I hadn't heard. He said, I bring news, my lord the king. Ahithophel is among the conspirators. He has joined forces with Absalom. Ahithophel was Queen Bathsheba's grandfather and was widely known to be probably the wisest counselor in our kingdom. Everybody respected this man greatly. He had been keeping a low profile for some time. He had gone back to his hometown in Gilo. Little did we know that he was in on this scheme with Absalom the whole time. For the king to hear that his own son had risen up against him was bad news. To hear that he had won the hearts of the men of Israel was dangerous. But for him to learn that Ahithophel has sided with him, this day just got impossibly dark. And I heard the king cry out and pray loudly, O Lord, make foolish the counsel of Ahithophel. He may as well have been praying for the Lord to make the grass blue. For this man's counsel was anything but foolish, but he cried out. The servant bowed and left, and David continued on his way, and finally I caught up to him at the summit of the hill. I knelt before him. My robe was torn. I had dust on my head. He said, my lord the king, your servant is here to serve you. He said, my friend, if you come with me into the wilderness, you will just be a burden to me. I am not, as I said, as young as I used to be. But, and an idea was playing on his mind, you could read it in his eyes. He says, if you would return to Jerusalem and go right into the palace, and when Absalom comes, say, long live the king. Welcome, your majesty. I will serve you as I served your father David. He says, if you would do that, you could serve as a spy. You could help frustrate the counsel of Ahithophel. That was a dangerous plan, and one that was far from certain to succeed. I must have hesitated, and he saw it on my face, and so he said, my friend, listen, you won't be alone. Won't Zadok and Abiathar be there and their sons, Jonathan and Ahimaaz? Go to the palace, and whatever you learn, tell it to the priests, and they will send word to me with their sons. Will you do this for me? My lord the king, I am your servant. I will do as you say. And so while my friend and my king headed east down the other side of the Mount of Olives, I headed west back into the city. Unsure of what I would find. When I got into the city, I reached the city around the same time as Absalom and his entourage were arriving. David's timing was, he had no time to spare. The atmosphere in the city was changed again. There were all sorts of people in the streets, and you could tell these were not residents of Jerusalem. These were men from the northern tribes and the other areas who had thrown their support behind Absalom. And they were moving through the streets and celebrating, loudly proclaiming, "Long live King Absalom! Hail King Absalom!" And some of the citizens of Jerusalem itself were joining in. Absalom had been playing a very shrewd political game for the better part of 4 years. This man was not just full of blind ambition. He was very shrewd. He had set himself up at the city gates, and he would intercept visitors to the king. And he would greet them. He would bow to them. They know he's the prince, tall, handsome, good-looking. And he would embrace peasants and kiss children. "Why have you come to Jerusalem today?" And they would say, "I've come to speak to the king. I have a complaint. I have an issue that I need sorted out." And this devious son of the king would say, "Oh, you know, I hear what you're saying. I feel your pain. Your case is right and good. But there's no one from the king that's going to be able to hear your argument. Ah, oh, I can't wait till I'm king. If only I were judge in Jerusalem, I would see that you got what you needed." And bit by bit, man by man, family by family, he had stolen the hearts of the people. So there were people in Jerusalem very happy with this change, but there were others, you could tell, they didn't know what to think. They were subdued, they were afraid. For me, I came to town and realized I needed to get home very quickly. I was known as a member of David's council. My robe was torn. I had dust on my head. I had been mourning. I needed to get home, change my robe, and wash myself, make myself presentable to see Absalom. And so I did that by back streets to try to be avoided. When I had cleaned up, before I went to the palace, I stopped by and I managed to get in a word with the priests. I let them know that I was here and of David's plan. I said, "I will be in the palace. I will find out what I can, I will see what I can learn, and then I will bring word to you." But I said, "Listen, we need a plan to get this to David. Absalom is no fool. His men will be watching us." I said, "Send your sons, Jonathan and Ahimaaz, outside of the city walls." "Where should we send them?" they said. I said, "Go to the spring. Go to En-Rogel, down to the spring in the valley. Tell them to go down there and hide. Do you have a servant girl?" I asked them. "Of course," they said. I said, "Have her standing by with a jar of water. And when I send word to you and give you a message, tell her and have her go down to the spring and pass on the message to the boys. No one is going to raise an eyebrow at a servant girl going down to the spring. But if you or your sons try to go, Absalom's men will see it." "This is a good plan," they said. "Okay, we will do as you say." And I headed for the palace. When I got there, the guards stopped me. This was a new experience for me. I was used to being able to walk right in. I had access to the king's throne room, to the king's council chambers. I had the highest security clearance in the land. And now I'm being stopped at the door like a salesman. I announced who I was, and the guards relayed the message inside, and I didn't know if I would get any further. For all I knew, the word would come to kill me on the spot. But no, they yielded and said, "Yes, come in, the king will see you." I was escorted by men, and I noticed they were armed, into the throne room. As we walked through the palace, I was amazed at how different this once familiar building felt, knowing that it was full of rebels. I got into the throne room and I saw him, Absalom, sitting there looking smug, looking arrogant, on his father's throne. He had been dreaming of this day for a long time. I had prayed with the priests before I came. They knew it was dangerous. I knew it was dangerous. They had prayed for my safety and the king's, but now it was time to act and time to trust. I went and knelt low before the king. I said, "Long live the king! Long live King Absalom!" The king looked at me for a moment. He said, is this the love you show your friend? If David was your friend, why didn't you go with him? Why are you here?" He was suspicious. But I rose to my feet. And I said, no, no. The one the Lord has chosen, the one that these men have chosen, the one that Israel has chosen, him I will serve. As I was loyal to your father, so I will be loyal to you. Who else should I serve but the son? I served your father, and I will be a servant to you the same way, King Absalom. And then I waited. Was he going to buy it? He seemed to. Okay, he says. But then they seemed to ignore me. I was in the throne room. Absalom was sitting up front with all of his counselors, and I noticed Ahithophel was there. Ahithophel, this great counselor. When Ahithophel spoke and gave his opinion on a matter, it was as though God himself had given the wisdom on it. That was how highly regarded he was by David and Absalom and all his men with him. And they had obviously been in some sort of discussion about strategy before I came in, and they quickly went back to it. The king asked Ahithophel a question, but he didn't respond, and instead sort of shot me a sidelong glance, and the king understood. He and his counselors moved into the council chamber, and I was dismissed. So I found myself in the courtyard. I don't know how David does it. This was a man who was no stranger to threats, to danger, to treason, although he had never faced anything like this. But he somehow had an ability to trust God even when the world was coming down around his ears. I was losing it. He had sent me on this impossible mission. Go and frustrate the counsel of Ahithophel. Ahithophel, who was right now, as we speak, inside the palace, in the council chamber, telling the treacherous son Absalom how best to destroy his father and steal his throne. And I'm kicking stones around in the courtyard, and I'm supposed to trust God. I'm David's friend, I'm his counselor, and I've advised him through many different situations as he led and made decisions for our country. And I don't want to boast, but I'm not bad at my job. I could give advice. I could evaluate a situation. I could make a plan that takes into account all the different contingencies. But David had a gift. David could take that advice. He could form a wise plan. He could put it into action. But all the while, he's trusting God to act on his behalf. The plan is something that he would act out with his whole heart. He was not a man of half measures. But it's like, on one hand, the plan was the plan. On the other hand, it didn't matter. He was trusting God to act on his behalf. I'm in a situation where I needed to do the same thing. Would I be able to? It felt like about a week in the courtyard. And finally, a guard came out and said, King Absalom requests your presence. Come with me. I followed him and I was shown back into the throne room. King Absalom was on his throne. All of his counselors were around him. Ahithophel was standing there, looking smug. I didn't know what this was about, but I thought, at least a chance to do something. He called me in and he said something I didn't expect. He said, Hushai, we would like your advice. See, we've been discussing strategy and I've asked Ahithophel what he thinks we should do next, and here's what he's told me. Ahithophel says that I should gather 12,000 men from my troops, pick the best, and he and my generals will lead those 12,000 men and pursue my father this very night. He says we should track him to where he is now and pounce on him while he is tired and weary. He says that the army is to be instructed to kill only the king. The rest of the men will scatter, and then they will return to me. The one man dies, the rest come back like a bride to her husband. This is what Ahithophel says. So Hushai, is this a good plan? What do you think? And if not, what's your opinion? I was dumbfounded. My first impulse was, this has got to be a trap. Who asks for a second opinion when your first opinion came from Ahithophel? They're all looking at me. I paused for a second. And then I spoke and I said, words I never thought I would say. Said, my lord the king, the advice Ahithophel gave is not good this time. You could have heard a pin drop. I said, you know, my lord the king, that your father is a fierce fighter, and the men with him are mighty warriors, and right now they are like angry bears robbed of their cubs. If you pursue him now, this will not end well. You know your father. He's a veteran. He's smart. He's not with the troops. Even now, he's probably hidden in a cave or a den somewhere. Why, for all you know, while your army is going out to attack his, he may ambush your men. And then what will happen? Word will get out. There's been a slaughter amongst the men who follow Absalom. And then, O king, the hearts of your bravest soldiers, even those who had hearts like lions, would melt in utter fear, because they and all Israel know your father is a valiant fighter, and those with him are mighty men. No, this is what I advise. I say you wait and send word and gather all the men of Israel from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south. Gather them all like the sand of the sea. And then you, O king, you lead the army yourself. And you go out and we will find him. And wherever he is, we will descend on him and his men like the morning dew. Not one of them will escape alive. And if you're worried that he will withdraw into some fortified city, that's fine. You lead us, and all of the men of Israel will go to that city with ropes, and we will drag it down if we have to pull it into a valley so that there's not one stone left on another. Then the hands of all of those who are with you will be strengthened, O king. That's what I advise. I could not believe my own words. I was standing in the throne room. Ahithophel was standing right there. He had given probably the soundest tactical advice that he could have given the king. We all knew David was exhausted. We all knew he had to leave in a hurry and wasn't properly provisioned. We all knew the people with him were afraid. We all knew that he was running and had no chance to reach a fortified position. Pursuing him right now was the smartest course of action. And I had advised him to wait and to try and muster a bigger army like that would help if you gave David the time to go and hide. Had they not remembered what David did when given a head start when Saul was pursuing him? This was not a man you could find. Ahithophel had given awesome advice. I had offered what seemed to me like a schoolboy's alternative. And here I'm waiting. And to my amazement, in those seconds that seemed like days, the king was considering it. He was actually weighing it out. I didn't look directly at him, but I could feel Ahithophel just staring daggers into my heart. Slowly the king began to nod. He looked at some of his other officials, and they were nodding too. And a smile crept across his face. I like it, he says. I like that plan. What do you men say? And all the elders of Israel with him are like, yes, that is an excellent plan. The advice of Hushai is better than the advice of Ahithophel. Let's do that. I went into that throne room that day not thinking I would survive. And I can't believe my eyes. God has actually answered King David's prayer. Here he's frustrated the plans of Ahithophel. The atmosphere, the whole atmosphere in the room changed. The men started busily making plans. Arrangements were made. Who would send messengers to all these different points in the kingdom to rally the troops? Other men were arranging, okay, how will we organize this army and get supplies for them? Others were breaking out maps to plan the best route for this army to take to plan their attack. The decision had been made and was in full force. The king kept me close. He kept asking me my advice on this preparation and that aspect of the plan. It was all I could do to stay calm. All I could think of is I need to get out of there to get to the priests. A couple of times I glanced at Ahithophel, and I couldn't read him. He looked utterly, utterly drained. The last time I looked for him, I couldn't see him. Finally, I was able to get permission to leave. The plans were underway. The king thanked me again, and I left. No armed escort this time. As soon as I walked calmly out of the palace and was pretty certain I wasn't being watched, I moved as quickly as I could to the priests, and I explained the plan. They had been anxiously awaiting news. "Men," I said, "God has answered David's prayer. God has acted mightily on his behalf, but we need to move quickly. You must send word to David that he cannot spend the night by the forts. They must cross tonight without fail or they will be swallowed up. Do you have your messenger ready?" "Yes," they said, "we have a servant girl that we will send." "Okay." And then I returned home. There was nothing to do but wait. But I knew something then that David knew, and I knew it by experience. I had put my trust in God. I had acted, but God had acted on my behalf. The plan worked, by the way. In a couple of days, the true king came back. The treacherous son had been killed in battle. David and his men had come back, and peace was restored to the kingdom. I had heard some of the stories. Ahimaaz and Jonathan had quite a time getting the message to David. They had been seen and pursued, and they almost didn't make it, but they got there in time. And it was a good thing, too, because while it was difficult in the dark for all of the people to cross the Jordan, there were allies of theirs waiting with fresh supplies for them, and they were able to take up a defensible position in a town nearby. God had truly answered his prayer. Like I say, my name is Hushai. I'm the king's friend. I'm his confidant and his counselor, and it is my job to advise him. But through the events of that day, I learned more from David than any amount of my advice had ever taught him. Afterwards, he showed me a psalm that he had written. He said that he had written most of it while he was waiting for news at the fords. He was dark and weary, and he wrote these words. He says, "O Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying of me, 'God will not deliver him.' But you are a shield around me, O Lord. You bestow glory on me and lift up my head. To the Lord I cry aloud, and he answers me from his holy hill. I lie down and sleep. I wake again because the Lord sustains me. I will not fear the tens of thousands drawn up against me on every side. Arise, O Lord. Deliver me, O Lord. Strike all my enemies on the jaw and break the teeth of the wicked. From the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people." This was a man who understood that trusting God means acting, but at the same time, trusting with all your heart that God will act on your behalf.